Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. Okay, I've doubled the pleasure today. My guests are a husband and wife team that have released two very important reference books on the subjects of arthritis, Crohn's, gout, and several other related painful maladies that, alas, seem to be increasing rather than decreasing in frequency in today's modern world. My guests are Emmanuel Barling Esquire and his wife, Ashley Brooks, RN. Welcome to you both.
Well, thank you, and we appreciate being on your show, Simon.
Hi, Simon. Thank you.
Manny, maybe we can start with you. Who is Manny Barling?
Well, I'm a retired lawyer, forced to retire after 30 years because of an 8.5-hour cancer surgery for colon cancer. I discovered I had Crohn's, which then caused me to have arthritis, gout, and all these other illnesses. So I ended up spending 13 years trying to figure out what was wrong with me, what the doctors weren't telling me, and what the heck to do about my health problems, because the medical system only prescribed drugs. So basically I found that every bit of knowledge that the doctors had came from going to drug companies' seminars and being paid to basically prescribe drugs. So I went out on my own and discovered my own solutions.
And essentially what you're saying is you didn't buy into the take two aspirins and it'll go away.
No, I spent 20 years representing hospitals, medical clinics, HMOs, and sitting on boards, and I know what the real truth is, and I know how this is handled. So I didn't buy into the rank-and-file explanation, and I just wanted a better answer.
Ashley, don't let Manny hog the spotlight. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a graduate nurse from Ohio. I did emergency room nursing in Ohio and in Chicago. I also had the privilege of working with the father of American environmental medicine, which is Dr. Randolph. He's one of the founders of the elimination diet. But, I mean, he did the elimination history with allergies, and then we created the diet. I myself was on chemotherapy in my 20s, and I learned in my 20s to juice and do these other things that would help, that helped as we progressed with Manny's illness.
You both clearly lead very active lives. What decided you to commit pen to paper?
Well, one day I said to my doctor, who was a 25-year client, a good friend of mine, why can't I get answers? And he looked at me and said, Manny, you can research as well as I do, and you have so much time, and you'll probably do it better than me. And the light went on and went, duh, maybe I should research it. Maybe I should write all this down. And the minute I started researching it, I became offended by what I found, and both Ash and I reacted that way, and we've been offended ever since and been writing ever since.
Ashley, has this been a journey of discovery for you?
Oh, absolutely. In 1997, when he had the colon cancer surgery, it was startling to see Manny go from this active gentleman to someone was in a wheelchair, he was using a cane, he'd be fine for 3 weeks, he'd be down for, 3 weeks, and he spent more time crippled in bed, unable to get out of bed, than he did not in the medicines that they were giving him. One medicine gave him a heart attack. I mean, so we either went with the finding a way to make his body work and find its own homeostasis so that we can get him back in balance. It's been quite a journey, and I would not wish this on anyone else. And if these books can help other people to skip through what we have been through since 1997 and get them up and on their feet, that would be great.
And one thing that we wanted to add is, you know, more than 79 million people in the United States suffer some form of arthritis. And if any of your listeners are suffering from arthritis, and gout is a form of arthritis, what's in our book can help them stop suffering so much. I now can walk around markets, go shopping at farmers markets with my wife, and lead a relatively normal life. But for 3 years, it was a wheelchair or a cane.
That's been longer, Annie.
Oh, yes. Well, 3 horrible years. The rest were going uphill and downhill. But if you want to stop that pain in your life and you want to stop getting up and going, I can't walk, my ankle's swollen, my shoulder hurts, then you need to look at the remedies in our book. They cost less than $100 a month. And one of the things we found is once you're on them, you eat far less food, your monthly food costs go down, and as Ashley points out, they taste better, they, your meals are better, and you won't want to eat fast foods. So
right.
Same way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's changed how we cook. It's changed. And I keep going back to Dr. Randolph. I wish he was alive for us to say thank you. I mean, his journey, he would take people with water, and the simplest thing can make people sick. I was amazed at even the spices. A friend of ours came back from Portugal and said, Europe will not use our spices because they are GMO. So we threw the spices out and went organic with the spices. It was one more thing that was making him sick.
You know, I read many books, but if anyone calls me a book critic, I'll hit them squarely between the eyes with the said book. Right, I'm a reviewer, right?
Yes.
I read for edification, not destruction. I do, however, notice details that the casual reader might miss. I mean, that's just par for the course. And in the case of a non-fiction reference-type work, research into the subject is key. These two books have obviously been meticulously researched. How long did it take?
Well, it took me 5 years of writing and over 3,000 reference books. We went right to the periodicals like Pediatrics, Chemical Books, everywhere around the world.
I went back to my pharmaceutical books to try to find what the inert excipient ingredients are and all the vitamins and the medicines to find out the very things that were making him ill. And it's taken us since 1997 to find these answers. I hope people can skip past all those years.
In many respects, Simon, I treated this like I was practicing law. I wrote what Ash and I felt was the ultimate Supreme Court brief on foods, diets, and the problems Americans are facing, hoping we could present everybody a total picture. And as we say in the back of our book and in the introduction, if you don't believe what we're saying, read the specific references of the back of the book and read it yourself. You don't have to believe it. Believe us, read it yourself.
And one of the things we were definitely after was accuracy. So a lot of the information in the back, we have checked and rechecked to make sure that the information is accurate.
In fact, we offer multiple sites, periodicals for sometimes the same theories. So it isn't just one voice out there. There are many voices. For example, on GMOs, more than 100,000 doctors in Europe basically signed petitions to stop it. On the issues of genetically modified soy, over 2 million people in Japan signed petitions to prevent American soy from being shipped in Japan. And I wonder if your listeners know that Mexico won't even accept our beef because it's contaminated. But they sell it in the United States to us.
And I think the salmonella, which is up in our face as of yesterday, the salmonella problem is another offense of the GMO. It's one more thing that I hope people do take the time to read these books.
Oh, and I'm sure they will. Actually, Ashley, I have a question for you. But I want to start with a story, and it's all about food, because that's what we're talking about. My wife and I did not sign a prenup agreement, but it was an absolute unwritten law that divorce would be in the air if I should ever cook cabbage in the house. She seems to have an unnatural aversion to this wonderful veggie. She claims that just the mere smell of it turns her stomach.
Well,
I mean,
before Ashley answers, let me throw this in. We have a dear friend from Milwaukee who will not let his wife cook fish in the house because he's from Milwaukee. He only eats meat, and the smell of fish is disgusting to him. So she has to go cook her fish in a grill outside where he can't smell it. Go ahead, Ashley.
Okay. Anyway, my solution was to buy Brussels sprouts. You know, in my mind, you know, they're just miniature cabbages, and I'm allowed to cook them. Okay, there is a point to this story. Clearly, there are foods that Manny cannot eat, and cooking techniques that he cannot cope with without having severe repercussions. You yourself don't have many of those same restrictions. How do you find the happy medium?
We actually, first of all, this question should be towards Manny because he's the chef in the house. So what we actually do is we have planned out, in fact, we're hoping to do a cooking book to answer these for people. And we cook on a Saturday. We do all of our organic cooking on a Saturday or a Sunday. And he does things that are good for his diet. I do things that are good for my diet. And, of course, both of us have our own elimination style that we are good for him, good or not good for him is good for me, and vice versa, as you said. And so we don't really have a problem or conflict at all with food because we have glass dishes that we put in the refrigerator. We fix our meals during the week separately. And it works out perfect. He stays healthy. I stay healthy, and it's been a great plan.
In fact, Simon, the purpose of Manny's Diet and Enzyme formula isn't to get everybody to eat our diet like Weight Watchers. It teaches readers to make their own diet, so essentially figure out the foods best for them, which might be the foods best for you are not the ones best for your wife, and create a diet so each one of you eat the foods that make you most healthy and prevent both of you from being ill. And in many cases, couples can't eat the same food. So at night, if you cook the same meal, one person may be feeling good from that meal, and the other one, the meal may not be right for the other husband or wife. So we've created a way where we don't necessarily eat the same meal, much like going out to a restaurant, but our satisfaction is equal because we both get exactly what our bodies need.
And we're both happy and don't have any conflicts with it. It's actually worked out perfect.
In fact, the title of the next book is Manny and Ashley's Organic Cooking and Growing for Couples.
We grow our own fruits and vegetables. We have fruits in our front yard, and we've got around the pool, we've got pots of tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, and it's just been great, so we don't have as much of the pesticide problem here.
Oh, I am a big fan of, you know, homegrown. I would take homegrown over even the absolute best farmer's market available.
Well,
but
Simon, you got to be careful. We're in California, and homegrown in California these days means something entirely different.
Well, I think we're up to 180 pounds of tomatoes right now. We just really outdid ourselves this year.
Okay, I do have a tomato story for the pair of you, and you'll probably laugh yourselves off your seats. I wanted to grow some tomatoes this year, but I didn't want to grow just the regular tomato. I've always wanted to grow some heirlooms. And here in Mississippi, I thought, we've got the climate. You know, heirlooms take a lot longer than the GMO versions. So I got online, and I discovered something called the Italian tomato tree. It was deemed to grow 12 to 15 feet high, have fruits of anywhere from 1 to 3 pounds. I thought, This is the one for me. I actually ordered seeds, but instead I got a plant. And I went, oh, okay, fine. Grew the plant. It got up to about 10 feet high. And, oh, it was about a week ago. I went out and looked at it, and it didn't look so good. I thought, got to be something odd with this. I haven't used any herbicides, pesticides, and I certainly haven't annoyed the neighbors. So I,
to your knowledge.
to my knowledge. In fact, it was the neighbor that selected this particular spot, you know, for the plant. You know, it would get sun in the afternoon, blah, blah. Anyway, each day that I've gone out, it's been stripped a little more. Yesterday, I found the culprit. I have it up against a fence, and I saw this big ant. I mean, much bigger than you would find in California. And what is it doing? It's carrying off a piece of my tomato plant.
That is so funny. It was definitely a Mississippi ant, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Did it have a license plate like the palmettos in Florida?
it was big enough to have a license plate.
That's funny. Oh, my gosh. I would be madder than a hatter.
No, we cured that. We put it out on... I actually grow tomatoes in plastic pots, and I create my own soils, and they grow much better and more productive. But I have the pots sitting on concrete, so in Los Angeles it gets pretty hot this time of year, and these bugs don't like crawling across hot concrete to get to our tomatoes, so we haven't even needed a fertilizer.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and by the way, I didn't know Paul Bunyan was of Italian descent, because those sound like Paul Bunyan tomatoes.
They sure do. Oh, my gosh, I've never heard of this plant. I now have to go look at it and see what it looks like.
They're huge. And I don't know how good the fruits are. And in fact, I won't find out this year because the ants have decimated the plant.
We have a plum tree that's like that, that the squirrels eat all of the plums. And in fact, last year there were two plums left for me, and the squirrel went flying, whizzing past my head to let me know, don't even bother thinking about those two plums. So I understand.
Now, we feel much like we're in one of those childhood cartoons where the farmer's in a battle with the squirrel who's eating everything he wants to, and the farmer always loses. Well, that's what happens to our plums every year.
That's right. I've yet to have one.
You obviously need to sit outside with a shotgun.
We've contemplated that.
Not the weeder. I'm the one still carrying the spiders outside.
it's a male thing, Simon.
Okay. On a more serious note, arthritis, Crohn's, gout, etc., it's been part of mankind since the earliest written records. In fact, in your books, you make mention of the fact that there's actually some fossil evidence that the dinosaurs suffered from it.
5 million years ago.
Yeah. Can one of you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah. Almost every dinosaur bones they find show evidence of arthritis. So did Oxy and every other, I would say ancestor of the human race they find has arthritic tendencies. So, in fact, even apes and a variety of different species in our modern society still are capable of getting arthritis. In fact, arthritis is not limited to any race, color, creed, size, shape, or anything. A 12-year-old can get arthritis. It's an inflammation in your joints caused by your brain sending a signal to your body that something's wrong and sends antibodies to attack it. That's why you see high school athletes with arthritic knees. Every player in National Football League, NBA, et cetera, at an early age deal with some form of arthritis. And almost everybody I know, since I've written the book, almost everyone I know has walked up and said to me, you know, I have a relative, a father, a brother, somebody who suffers terribly with arthritis and gout.
And one of the things that I made a discovery with is I woke up the other night thinking about one of the biggest things that all of us do is say, oh, it's in our genes, it's genetics, it's part of our history, I have to learn to live with it. And that's not really true. What we discover with the enzymes is a lock and key mechanism that works within our body. That is the one common thing that affects every part of your entire body. And if it's not in balance, then you're going to have diseases, and any disease at all, arthritis, heart attack, diabetes, everything is connected to those enzymes.
And I want to add something. Our theories aren't new. We found out after we wrote the book, these theories were advanced by Professor Hermann Emil Fischer, a German professor in the 1880s, who's the Albert Einstein of organic chemistry. He won the Nobel Prize for many of the theories in our book in 1903, but they don't teach us in school and no one told us. If you want to learn it, you have to go to a seminar at Harvard for a weekend and pay $5,500 to hear an expert teach you this stuff. So,
sponsored by the drug companies, so that you will learn enzymes and how they are used synthetically in drugs.
You know, there are over 437 drugs on the market, including all of the Zantac and other antacids that are nothing more than synthetic enzymes. So people have been taking synthetic enzymes in over-the-counter drugs and prescription drugs for years without knowing it. So why not take natural enzymes manufactured by nature and have been designed by Mother Nature for your body?
Okay, I do have to ask a question. You know, obviously arthritis and its, you know, other brothers, cousins, etc., are not modern, but there is most definitely a modern twist, and it's a twist that I'm hoping you can explain. That there's been huge strides made in the medical arena over, let's say, the past 100 years. There are definitely some killer diseases that essentially have been eliminated. Yet the incidence of arthritis, gout, seems to be on the rise. Why is that? Is it what we eat?
No question it's what we eat. The principal cause for increased arthritis is what we and doctors call chronic silent inflammation. It's caused by the chemicals in your food, whether it's the residues of pesticides and herbicides caused by eating the genetically modified fruits and vegetables in the market that are also in more than 9,000 foods on the shelf, along with ingredients like MSG, maltodextrin, high fructose corn syrup, and all these synthetics are inflaming the body. It deceives the mind, and the mind sends these antibodies to attack these foreign invaders, and it gives you arthritis. And I want to illustrate one point. In the 60s, when MSG was banned because of Chinese food, there was only 1 million pounds a year sold. Now, more than 400 million pounds were sold last year. You can't buy it on the grocery shelf, so where is it? It's in your foods, in your packaged foods, your fast foods, and every time you go to the restaurant, you're eating chock full of MSG. That's the principal problem.
Okay,
I wanted to add one other thing. The pyramid food group will say to people, and I hear medical professionals always say this, and I'll talk as a person, not as a nurse, okay? And the thing is that people will say, oh, you know, I did juicing, this is really good for me, or I had a bowl of fruit for more breakfast, this is really good for me. But if they are not eating organic, then they are getting a mouthful of pesticides. And it is inflaming their bodies. It's as they might as well just not even eat it, but they need the enzymes from them, so they have to eat organic.
And I want to add, if you're a vegan or a vegetarian listening to this show, you have a no better chance with this than someone who eats red meat, because every fruit and vegetable you buy in the store is polluted with pesticides and herbicides and can damage your body just as much as the beef that is fed genetically modified corn. So it doesn't matter what walk of life or what your diet is in this country, you're eating these foreign chemicals that invade your body.
In addition to the fact that there is a problem with the soy. The soy, 90% of the soy that people are getting is genetically modified. And we research this and double research it because people say, oh, this is, you know, another urban legend. And it's not an urban legend where you're only supposed to have 49 grams of soy a day. I hear people saying, oh, I pour it on my cereal. I'm drinking full soy milk bottles. No, it is so bad for people. And it causes illness. So you have to do preventative, if anything, stop it.
Okay, but many people live in areas where they don't have easy access to real food, shall we say.
Yes.
So I have a theory about grocery shopping. Now, I know that the video that you two have put together kind of shoots my theory down, but,
okay.
You know, hear me out. You know, the average person never reads the list of ingredients on anything. So if you're going to go to the regular, you know, mega mart, your local supermarket, my theory is keep on the outside, you know, the outside aisles. At least you've got vegetables, you've got meat, usually you've got bread if they have a bakery. Try at all costs to avoid the inside aisles because it just gets worse. Would my idea at least be a starting point?
Well, yes. In fact, let's add this. Surveys show that Americans spend maybe 1/26 of a second looking at a label before they throw it in their cart. So no matter where you go, you have to look at the labels and look at who supplies the food. The problem with the outside aisles, which include the fruits and vegetables, is they buy the genetically modified fruits and vegetables, which you know from your knowledge of King Corn and the other documentaries. So that's why we go to the farmers markets. You need to find other sources, local farmers and other things. But you must consider you can't wash this stuff off. Imagine marinating a piece of meat for 2 days to put on the barbecue and then deciding to wash the marinade off. Well, that same principle applies to pesticides and herbicides on those fruits and vegetables. I love fruits and vegetables. I've always eaten what I thought was a good diet till I found they were polluted. So if I go pick the best fruits and vegetables in the market, they'll make me ill. They may not make your listeners ill, but they are acting inside their bodies, and it shows up later with increased cancer rates, diabetes, heart attacks, and that's why diabetes and the rest are going up. In fact, America should ask itself, why are there so many millions of Americans on dialysis now, and it's such a big issue? And the answer is because they're liver and kidneys are being polluted with these poisons that are in the fruits and vegetables and these outside aisles of the market.
That's right. We can't. Our bodies cannot process what it's taking in. And yes, your theory does work, but I think that people definitely need to go find farmers markets around, and they're all over the country, so I know people have access to them.
Oh, indeed. But both of you have mentioned genetically modified food several times. I was reading an article not very long ago, and these GMOs are already out in the wild. I mean, now where do we go?
Well, there's a large movement, in fact, in San Francisco in federal court. One of the groups that are opposed to GMOs was successful in blocking the use of genetically modified cotton and some other varieties because they were contaminating local farmers. And the fear, and this is one of the reasons Europe has banned genetically modified organisms, is that they spread and contaminate the other crops like a sci-fi movie. Anyone who saw that classic Day of the Triffids, you know, can look at their asparagus and broccoli and the rest of them in the fields being polluted by something else and turning into monster plants. The problem is, if they grew two heads and a tail, you'd go, I'm not going to eat that. but the dangers are hidden, so people eat it not knowing until they suddenly wonder why they're a diabetic, or suddenly wonder why the doctor says they have prostate cancer, or in my case, I wondered why I had colon cancer. I had two malignant tumors the size of golf balls, and the enzymes took me off the cancer list and took me off you're going to die in 2 years list.
And it also allowed him foods that were on his no list, because he had a huge no list, or back on the okay list. He can now eat them. Where, you know, the genetically modified lettuce, we didn't even know it was genetically modified at the market.
And we also didn't know that they sprayed it. For example, you buy a tomato in the market, they spray it with ethylene to make it turn red. So they ship it on the green side, spray it with a chemical so it's bright red for you. So anytime you go to a market and you see these beautiful, bright red, technicolor vegetables, ask yourself, how did they get these colors?
And they're tasteless.
Yeah. Ashley tells this wonderful story. We walk around a farmer's market, and a little boy says to his mother, oh, look, there's a bug in this corn. And she goes, oh, then don't eat. We can't eat it. And Ashley said, you know, really, that's what you want to eat, because that means there were no pesticides, et cetera, and this is natural organic corn. So the difference is, yeah, there's some bugs. The corn
they're not pretty.
They're not pretty, but they taste great.
Yeah. I got nothing against bugs. Well, apart from the ants.
They're eating your tomatoes.
And by the way, you're lucky. We get caterpillars that are beautifully green with heads that look like a praying mantis that can eat more than the idiot tomato 10 times their size and weight. And these little boys get in there, and I assume they're little boys because they're greedy and they eat too much, and they can devour a tomato in no time, and they're hard to see.
Okay, I want to play devil's advocate for a moment. For hundreds of years, probably thousands of years, farmers have been playing the same genetic game. You know, they pick the best strains to propagate. Where do you draw the line in the sand? You know,
Simon, I would compare it to taking children. And even you take the negative Adolf Hitler analogy of breeding children to create an Aryan race, it's despicable, okay? But there's still, that's normal breeding. And it was and it still is despicable. But to take a vegetable, add things like the cauliflower mosaic virus, which is deadly, to make the plant do something else, or a variety of other things are added to genetic tomatoes, which are also deadly viruses, you really have turning into what we call a frankenfruit or frankenplant. In fact, there's a product on the market containing one of these that one reviewer called frankenweenies. So basically, you can compare the people doing genetically modified fruits and vegetables in their lab, the major corporations of America, as well-educated Dr. Frankenstein's experimenting with our food.
And it was one thing for them to take. In the beginning, they were using corn where they were taking two different types of corn to make a perfect corn. But it was just the corn. And they were using genetically modified at that point. But again, as Manny said, when you start playing with viruses and things that actually our bodies cannot break them down. And all the scientific proof of experimenting shows that it can't break it down, which is why the 100,000 medical doctors signed against it in Europe.
And to add one more, in Brazil, I think it was, they used a peanut gene to genetically modify a specific food. I've forgotten which one. I think it was broccoli. And what happened is people who had peanut allergies started to drop like flies before they realized it was the broccoli giving them, aggravating their peanut allergies. So when you eat a genetically modified fruit, unless you call Frankenstein Hotline and find out what Dr. Frankenstein did to change his fruit, you have no idea what you're eating.
You mentioned a movie earlier, and actually it's not a movie, it's a documentary, King Corn. I have to admit that I found that particular documentary shocking, and I actually had the opportunity to talk to the filmmakers. Horrifying.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, King Corn isn't about growing food. I mean, it's about economics.
Absolutely. It's about malignant narcissism.
Basically, what we're talking about are major corporations who are basically, not unlike big oil, exploiting Americans by making them addicted to food using high fructose corn syrup, which is, you know, from the documentary, derived from genetically modified corn.
Unedible corn.
Yes, that's one of the things Ashley loves to point out. Iowa is dominated by genetically modified corn. 90 to 99%, if not all, of the corn in Iowa is genetically modified. But none of the farmers can eat their own corn because it's disgusting to eat. But in a quick summary, if you drink Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or these other products, you look at the can, you look at anything else, it says it has 59 to 60 grams of sugar. That's 2 ounces of sugar. If you read any of the scientific articles we provide, they add an equal amount of high fructose corn syrup, the synthetic chemically made Frankenstein corn syrup, to the drink. So you're getting 4 ounces of synthetic sweetener, 2 ounces are synthetic, which are not on the label, and 2 ounces of sugar, which are on the label. And they hide these products by simply saying corn syrup. Or they hide the MSG in what we call clean labels, other foods like yeast extract. So they're hiding it for it. So if there's nothing wrong with these products, why do they hide them in foods? Why do they hide them in labels? That's the bottom line.
Okay. The other thing that bothers me is that science changes like the wind. In the 60s, at least in England, the big slogan was, go to work on an egg. This campaign extolled the virtues of eating eggs for breakfast. You know, you'd be set for the whole day. In the 90s, we were warned that, oh, you should only have 2 or 3 eggs a week. You know, more than that was bad. We get the same thing with milk. One generation tells us, drink milk, you know, it makes healthy bones. Another generation tells us that it's not a good substance. I mean, what can we do? You know, who do you believe?
Well, let me offer you this thought. I eat organically. I can eat eggs. I can eat any of them. None of them are a problem. They don't raise my cholesterol. I have no problem.
As long as it stays on this formula.
Right, with the enzyme formula. But people who buy eggs in the market are subject to yesterday's news, which is salmonella. And if you look at these Wright County eggs, the salmonella didn't come from some outside bacteria. It came from the fact that these base chickens and hens are put into cages, force-fed genetically modified corn, which is not their natural food, which alters their DNA, and it caused their reproductive organs to change, and the salmonella was genetically passed into the egg, which does not show up in any test used by the FDA or anyone else. So if we protect our food source and you're eating organic eggs from organic chickens who wander around the pasture eating all those little delights in the pasture, they're healthy and you can eat them every single day of the week. But if you're going to go to the store and buy these genetically modified eggs, even 1 egg is dangerous. Certainly 3 a week are dangerous. And the other point of this, which Ashley likes to make, is that it's about financial interests controlling the food pyramid in our country so they can make money.
That's what I was going to say next, yeah.
Yeah. And basically what they do is if the industry who wants you to eat breakfast cereal say eggs are no good for you. The industry who wants you to buy eggs say, well, look at all the sugar in cereal. Don't buy cereal. So a lot of this is just corporate America competing for your dollar by telling you their food service is better, not unlike car manufacturers saying, oh, my Toyota is better than your Datsun or your Nissan or whatever that is.
And I think it gets back to the diet we have created. By doing the elimination-style diet, you can see how your blood tests are. You can try these various organic foods and see what your tests are compared to with the enzymes, with the diet that you choose, or that works for your system. And I think that's a better program rather than corporations telling you everybody has to eat the same amount of, you know, whatever on that pyramid.
And by the way, it's simple. Nurses and doctors make charts of your health, chart your food. And if you eat, for example, if you eat genetically modified asparagus and it makes you sick, then guess what? That goes on your bad list. If you eat organic asparagus and you feel great, that goes on your good list. So at the end of a couple months, you have a list of the foods that don't make you sick, and you have a list of the foods that do make you sick, and the foods on your good list are your diet.
Which is good for you. Works with balance with you and balance out your body.
And I'll tell you, Simon, if you and I did this identically for 3 months and compared our lists, you would be on Simon's diet and I'd be on Manny's diet and Ashley would be on Ashley's diet.
Right.
And no two diets would be alike.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, I'd be cooking cabbage.
Of course, you'd be cooking outside in the barbecue with that cabbage, but,
or,
you know, keeping it out of the house.
Or living alone.
So, I mean, back to your books. What sort of reader feedback are you getting?
Well, getting a lot. I'll give you an example. One of my friends read a pre-release copy. It had a heart attack. It was diagnosed as a diabetic. And on 8 or 10 medicines, now he's down to 2. The doctors finally admitted that he was no longer a diabetic, so he's off diabetic medicine on an organic diet.
3 years.
And with our enzyme program. And one of the most important ones is we have a solution to high cholesterol. So he wanted to try it, and he went off Lipitor. Didn't tell his doctor or his girlfriend. So every month for 6 months, the doctor said, look how good you're doing on Lipitor. And finally, my friend felt so guilty. He said, you know, I'm not taking Lipitor. I'm taking enzymes and some herbs that my friend is recommending in his new book to being released. And you know what the doctor said to him? Oh, gosh, you still have to take Lipitor even though you're on that. So he now has no high cholesterol problems, no diabetes, and he's just on an organic diet taking our enzyme formula.
And he lost 30 pounds, which he needed to lose. Manny's lost 70 pounds, and I've lost close to 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they were all pounds we needed to lose.
and we didn't do it by starving ourselves,
no,
going to Weight Watchers.
Healthy dieting.
We did it by figuring out the foods that our body reacted best to. And by the way, they include everything from chickens to pork to God knows what, as long as it's organic and it's grilled and you eat organic vegetables. I'm eating vegetables I haven't been able to eat in 10 years.
Because his body, when Manny had surgery and a certain portion of his colon was removed, I'm so sorry no one had said enzymes at the time, because it's only logical. If you have a damaged or removed organ, that organ is supplying your body with enzymes to break down nutrition so that your body can work efficiently. So if you have a diseased or injured organ anywhere in your body or inflammation in your body, you don't have the enzymes and the bank of enzymes that you need to keep your body functioning and working well.
And let's end it with this thought here. Your body comes with a natural bank of enzymes. It's like having a lot of money in your bank. And over a period of your life, you use up the enzymes the same way you use up money. And guess what? If you're out of money, it can cause people to die and have a terrible life. If you're out of enzymes, it can cause you to die and have a terrible life. It's a very simple analogy. And the only way to save your life financially is get more money. And the only way to save your life in terms of enzymes is to take natural enzyme supplements coming from natural fruits and vegetables and things and supplement them, or you'll get diabetes and disease and arthritis, which is why so many elderly people are ill. They no longer produce enough enzymes to digest their food and to sustain their life.
Oh, okay, I have to break for an absolute shameless commercial reason. Where can people buy these great reference books? And they are great.
Thank you, Simon. They can go directly to our websites, Manny's Diet Book or Manny's Arthritis Book, and we will send it to them autographed. In fact, if they send us a note on what they would like, we'll put it in their book. If not, they can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In fact, we're available even in China. Of course, someone gave us a review in China and we couldn't read it, but that's another question.
Oh, that was a great review, Simon.
So the books are everywhere. You can go to our websites and watch videos of the books. We sent you a video. There's a video for up on YouTube. You can put the titles of the book into YouTube and watch the videos. We're trying to be all over the place. Hopefully we will.
So people don't have to go through it.
Okay, I have to break in just for a second. We're about to lose our live listeners, but listeners, please understand that the entire program will be recorded. Okay, sorry about that. I understand that you're close to releasing another book. What can you tell us about it?
Well, the title is It's Not Your Fault, Weight Gain, Obesity, and Food Addiction, and we are addressing why Americans are obese, particularly the youth of America, and how eating all these fast foods are causing everybody to become heavy. We're motivated by a show that Ashley watched on Oprah that basically everybody was blaming it on the psychological problems. As you know, behavioral sciences say it's in your head. We're saying, no, it's in your food. That there is a concerted plan among the food manufacturers who use MSG and other chemicals to addict you. In fact, I use the example that, you know, if I think I might have said it earlier, if you ordered a hamburger at a fast food place and there was heroin in it, and 2 weeks later you found out you were addicted to heroin, it's unlikely you would ever say, gee, it happened to me with fast foods. Well, I'm saying to America, you're addicted to chemicals. And I don't think one American would go, gee, you're right, I'm addicted because of fast foods, packaged foods, canned foods, and other things. No, they start going, it's in my head. That's why I'm drooling and I can't stop eating. It's all mental. But
which is what that whole show of Oprah's was. It was really very frustrating and upsetting to me because people were being blamed for things that they don't know. They don't know the truth about how it affects them chemically, how it affects their brain, and the actual addiction that is going on.
When can we expect to see this new book?
Well, we're hoping to have it out by Thanksgiving. It'll be somewhere for the holidays, so all of your listeners can give it to their friends and relatives as a gift.
Yeah, that's a great idea, hon.
It is a very serious commentary, not unlike a book that people have written about drugs and alcohol, about why these food chemicals, and we have hundreds of articles and things from doctors that, and scientists that have
proven. Oh, the studies are horrifying.
Yeah. In fact, you know, when they test laboratory rats, you know how they get these laboratory rats fat? They have to force feed them MSG so they can make them fat enough to test other things on them. Isn't that terrible?
It's the same hidden MSG that's going in the food.
Oof. No, they're horrifying.
It is horrifying, Simon.
So
okay.
And I'll give you this last thought about it. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Simon. Go ahead.
No. You carry on. Yeah,
okay,
it's your book.
Yeah, well, no, it's a thought for your listeners. If they consider every meal they've had, packaged food, et cetera, and say, okay, only a small portion, 1 ounce of this is some type of chemical like MSG, and they put it into a gallon jar, and they add up all these meals, at the end of a month, they could easily consume a gallon of MSG and these other things. After all, there's 434 million plus pounds of MSG sold to a population of 330 million. In our books, we get the actual statistics, amount of sugar and other things that people consume a day. So imagine if you consume 12 pounds of MSG a year, and you start at 5 or 6 years old, you're now 30 years old, and you've eaten 25 years in a row of that, you may have eaten 300, 400, 500 pounds of MSG, maybe even more. And if you're a fast food addict, 1,000 pounds by age 30 of MSG. By age 60, it's several thousand pounds. What do you think 2,000 pounds of heroin, cocaine, or any other addictive drug would do to your body over that length of time?
And the brain.
Especially the brain, and you can get an analogy of what MSG and the other things do.
Oh, there is only one answer, and that is death.
Yes.
And it's death or living in a body that can't think anymore.
And by the way, it's not sudden death. It's a long, torturous death with diabetes, heart disease, Crohn's disease. In fact, recent studies show that MSG is one of the things considered that are affecting autism as well as Alzheimer's. So a young child at 8 years old with autism may be a child who's been eating baby food with MSG since birth. And by the way, the food manufacturers promised to take MSG out of baby food in 1971, and one day later started putting yeast extract into baby food, which contained MSG. So to this day, if you're feeding your child baby food, you're feeding your child MSG and high fructose corn syrup.
Wow. I mean, alas, our time is at an end. I do want to thank Emmanuel Many Barling, Esquire, and his wife, Ashley Brooks, RN, for taking time out today to talk to us. And I sincerely hope that we can talk again.
And we'd like to thank you for all your kind words and your efforts on behalf of your readers to give them information other than what's disseminated by all the food manufacturers.
Thank you very much for that, Simon.
You know, you have raised more questions than answers. I'm sure that we will talk again. Till next time, I want to really thank you for your efforts in trying to educate people on the subject of food.
Thank you.
Till next time, this is Simon Barrett, and I wish everyone a great day. Goodbye.